House Committee on Education Subcommittee on Education Innovation is open, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2576. That hearing is now open, and would our administrator give us a notion of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2576 directs school districts that share territory to change boundaries or merge so that districts no longer share territory. Specifies an exception, declares an emergency, and becomes effective on passage. This bill has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue. There is also a -1 amendment which changes the date of implementation to July 1st, 2009 instead of July 1st, 2008. The -1 should be in front of you underneath the agenda. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the chief sponsor of the bill is here to testify on behalf of it.
And would the chief sponsor, Representative Girard?
And Senator Whitsitt.
Oh, and Senator Whitsitt. Do you have any others, Representative, that you'd like to share the dais with?
I think that's all,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I am Bill Girard, State Representative, District 56, which is Southern Klamath County and the city of Klamath Falls. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill. I'll try to frame for you as simply as I can what this overlap district and this bill is all about. The overlap is the portion of the Klamath Falls suburban area that sends its students to the county elementary schools but has them finishing at a high school in the city district. There are only two such overlap districts in the state. This one, which has some 18,000 population within the overlap district, and another small district in Crook County that has 71 students. They are exempted from this bill. So the bill you're looking at primarily just deals with the area of Klamath. Both districts had large bond issues turned down last November by fairly substantial margins. One of the identified reasons for that defeat at the polls was the overlap zone. Klamath County has 19 schools, the city district has 8. The overlap has existed for almost 40 years. Residents get 2 tax bills, which is often confusing. Parents with more than one child in the system often have one child required to be in school one day while the other child has the day off because that district has a different day off. There has been, to my knowledge, no real effort by either school board to coordinate the student attendance schedules. This bill was meant to bring the two district school boards into a public discussion of the overlap area. I want and feel that it is the school board's responsibility to not only have a public discussion on the overlap zone, but to take the required action. And to their credit, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think both school boards are in that process, and that process of public discussion has now begun. I'd like to just conclude my statement by reading to you an editorial, and I believe you have copies of this, that appeared in the Klamath Falls Herald and News just 1 week ago. Quoting now from the editorial, Oregon Rep. Bill Girard did his constituents a favor by establishing a deadline for talks aimed at eliminating the overlap district shared by the Klamath Falls City and the Klamath County School Districts. He's done them another one now that the two districts have focused on the problem to suggest that the July 1st, 2008 deadline he put in the bill submitted to the legislature isn't written in concrete. Members, you have an amendment, -1 amendment, that would change the effective date of this legislation to July 1, 2009. The overlap is a section of the Klamath Falls suburbs in which youngsters start out in the elementary schools run by the county district, but eventually end up either attending Klamath Union or Mazama High Schools, both of which are in the city district. The situation has long been a source of confusion to voters and claims by the county district and some residents within the overlap area that it creates a division of state funds unfair to the county district. The city school district denies the charge. It would be a welcome step forward if that issue could be resolved. That is the intent of the bill. It would be another if the overlap area would disappear and children in it would start and finish in the same school district. The two ways to eliminate the overlap are for the county district, which has 6,500 students, is to absorb the city district and its 3,500 students, or for the two districts to divide the overlap between them. The process of merging the districts does not necessarily require a vote of the people, though a regard for public opinion should make one compulsory. If the two boards agreed to a merger, the question would then go to the Southern Oregon Education Service Board for a decision. If enough voters within the district asked for a public vote, there would be one. That would be on consolidation of the two districts. Girard's bill in the legislature, which will have a hearing April 10th, sets a date of July 1st, 2008, for all school districts with combined enrollments of more than 10,000 that share territory to either change the boundaries to eliminate the arrangement or to merge. The local situation is the only one of the state that fits that criteria. Last week, Girard questioned whether the process was going fast enough, but also said he was willing to negotiate the deadline in the bill. That's the right approach to take. Nobody wants to make a mistake on this. No matter how simple things sound, the solution of the overlap problem or the advisability of folding the city school district into the county district contains many knotty issues. And I have Senator Whitsitt with me, and Madam Chair, depending on whether you'd like Senator Whitsitt to talk, I'll be happy to answer questions at the committees.
Yes. Please go ahead, Senator, and then we can have questions together.
Members of the committee. My name is Doug Whitsitt. I represent Senate District 28. Significant cost increases and patron inconvenience occur where school districts overlap one another. The increased cost is recovered from residents in the overlap zone by the property taxing authority of both districts. Although I have sold the rental property that I once owned in an overlap zone, I can attest to the fact that the property taxes are increased when we partially support two different school districts. That increase in property tax represents an unfair cost to property owners in the overlap zone. Residents in the overlap zone may also suffer the inconvenience of children attending schools in two different districts. This occurs either sequentially as a child progresses through the school system or simultaneously when the resident has children of different ages attending two different districts. In some cases, a child may start school in one district, attend middle school in a second district, then return to the first district for high school. Transportation costs are often significantly increased. Picture, if you will, school buses passing one another on a residential street to pick up children at the same residence. HB 2576 is a simple bill that requires school districts to either divide up the overlapped area or merge the overlap into one district. And I urge you to support the bill, please.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions? Okay, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chairman, just to be very clear, you're not suggesting that the decision has to be made one way or another, just that the decision has to be made. Is that correct?
I would respond yes, Representative Buckley. Yeah. I might also add that I am a resident of the overlap district. So.
Very good. Thank you.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's assume that rather than merging, the districts choose to go the other route, which would be to sort of split the difference. Would the county district then need to build a high school? What situation would they find themselves in if, rather than overlap, there was a line? My understanding is the county district doesn't have a high school in that area. Or can you talk a little more about that?
The county does have a high school, numerous high schools, but the primary one would be Mazama, which was built in the suburbs some 15 years ago, but now is in the city. It always has been in the city. It originally was a mid-school for 9th and 10th graders when it was first built. So we do have a high school in the suburban area, which is Mazama, but it is in the city school district. Did I answer your question?
Hold on, maybe just clarification. So the I'm trying to imagine the scenario that you suggested, or the editorial suggested, that the rather than have an overlap district, the county had it and city did not have any overlapping areas. Those county students who are currently served by a city high school, I assume Mazama, would no longer, at least without some sort of arrangement with the city district, be able to attend that school. Am I correct in that?
I don't think, Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, I don't believe that there's the attendance is anything other than directed by a geographical location as to which school. We also have Klamath Union High School in the city district and Mazama. And Mazama is the school that is geographically located in the county, but is a city district high school.
Madam Chair, I would need a map to sort this out.
I was
going to
say, are we having fun yet?
Anybody want to help clarify?
Representative Roblin.
Thank you. Question is this. Currently, as it's situated, those kids go to different schools. And the county school district has some elementary schools and a middle school that's not in the city, that's nearby.
The county no longer has a mid-school.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
It does, yeah, a 7th and 8th grade, yes.
Right, okay. So they have that the kids could go to that live in the county and in that disputed area. But they don't have a high school currently in their district that those kids would go to.
That's correct.
So all of the high school kids go to Mazama or Klamath Union because the county does have high schools, but they're a long ways away in a different part of the county. So that's how it works. So currently, as it is right now, those kids attend either elementary and mid school in the county and then move over. Or some of them attend the city elementary and mid school and high school. They go through the whole city school system the whole time because there are some of those kids that can do that. So this group has some choice. I think parents have some of the choice, don't they, as to which one they want?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Roblin, we have the superintendents of both school districts sitting behind me. And
okay. That'll probably be the best way. That's probably the best way to do it.
They would be eager to respond to your question.
Thank you. Any other? The superintendents are going to come.
I was going to ask, but I think the superintendents might be better able to answer my question.
I have a question for Representative Garrard.
Is it one he can answer?
Yes, ma'am. Representative Garrard.
Thank you for that vote of confidence.
Well, sometimes they're kind of off the beaten path.
This is an inside joke. So, Representative, how far is it from the school district to the city of Lapine?
Madam
Chair, I knew he was going to ask you something hard.
Representative Wisnett came into my district several times and has caught fish out of our lake, and I told him to stay out of Klamath County, and thus this is a response from him now to keep me out of Deschutes County.
Okay.
Thank you for that response, Representative.
And in response to Senator Wisnett, in response to Representative Wisnett, I believe it's about 95.3 miles.
There you go.
Thank you.
There's also one other thing I would like to point out, in that the county school district actually abuts into and takes in part of that south suburban area in Klamath. So there is an area of that school district that already goes to Henley High School.
Right. Oh, okay.
Unless you're, and then across the block, it just needs to be resolved. And the purpose of this bill is to encourage that resolution.
Thank you. Well, and Representative Garrard, we do have a few antics and jokesters on this committee, so I appreciate your levity.
They're much appreciated, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we'll have the two representatives, the people that are representing Klamath Falls School District, and that's Cecilia, how would you say that, staff?
It's the superintendent of the Klamath Falls City. Okay, I think it would be preferable if I don't try to mispronounce it.
How do you say your name?
Okay.
Well, it was very helpful on the phone, but I still had struggled with it. And Lori Theros.
Yeah. Thank you. If you'll please come forward and share your insights with us.
Was there someone else with your school district?
Yes, we have four of us.
Okay.
In the handout?
Yes, and just give those to our staff. And then as you testify, just make sure you say your name for the record so we know who's presenting. And you, I don't know if those chairs are hooked together, if you can. Please go ahead.
Okay. My name is Cecilia Muchastania. I'm the superintendent of Klamath Falls City Schools. And I'm here today to testify regarding House Bill 2576. As you know, this bill refers to the two school districts in Klamath Falls, Oregon. We are unique in that we share an area where students attend elementary and junior high schools in the Klamath County Schools and then attend high schools in the Klamath Falls City Schools. This shared attendance area has been referred to as the overlap. There have been several studies regarding this area. About every 10 to 12 years, the two districts have sat together to study the overlap area. In the early 80s, there was an election, and the solution was defeated, and the overlap stayed as it is. Again, in 1995, the two districts sat for 14 months to study and complete the state-mandated consolidation. When the boards were unable to reach a solution, the state legislature allowed the overlap to continue to exist with the funding formula that had been used prior to 1995. And that's been referred to, and that formula is elementary districts are funded at 0.9 and union high districts are funded at 1.2 ADM. This bill involves the state again when it really should continue to be a local issue. The date of July 2008 was too aggressive, and I'm very pleased to see the amendment of 2009. The two boards are working together to determine similarities and efficiency in a merger, boundary change, or other services. The two boards agreed to look at this issue after November. We hired a consultant from OSBA in January. We are committed to resolve issues at hand. We have only had 3 months to work, and we need more time. The bill was generated by a small group of citizens who live in the overlap area. It appears the residents of the Klamath Falls City Schools were not consulted and did not promote this legislation. I do not believe it is time for the state to be involved, as there are too many outstanding expectations that need to be resolved before we are ready to merge. It is too premature for a mandate, as both districts are working to study the current issues. We are coming out of a school funding recession period, and we need to get all of our funding issues on the table as we look at a countywide district, and the needs that it presents. There are many outstanding issues, including federal programs and special education services. In order to keep our programs as rich as they are, we must really look carefully at all the programs and all the services that we provide to children. The two districts should be allowed to take the necessary time to complete the study and make a recommendation that is best for all students. No student should lose services or programs in either district. There is an educational philosophy that is very different. We as a district have chosen different priorities. While both districts have maintained low class sizes, the city school district has maintained music specialists and librarians in each elementary school, providing vocal and instrumental music and library classes for all students. There are full-day kindergartens funded through the federal funding in the county schools that we cannot do with funding, federal funding, as we have one elementary school that is not Title I. There is a full complement of career technical education in the city high schools, and the county high schools have agricultural and ROTC programs. As we study the pros and cons, we have to consider all of the services and all of the programs. I do not believe that we should have to cut our services in order to merge. To continue all services and provide equity within the new district, it could be costly. The preliminary information we have received does not indicate that we will save money or provide better services than we do today. We have different technology systems, phone systems, and transportation departments. And the change or impact of combining these services at this time does not indicate a savings. This new district would approximately be 10,000 students, and we are studying administrative structures and salaries of districts of similar size. We must determine the exact impacts of a merger may have. Our district has worked to make sound financial decisions and to continue our academic programs that will enrich students' lives. We have not made quick decisions regarding our curriculum or what's best for students. We should not be forced today to move quickly on something that we need this in-depth study. Our boards have developed a study plan with 14 items to study. 10 different departments from each district have come together to identify current similarities, differences, and efficiencies if there were a merger. Our study is currently in the investigation stage, and there is more work needed to analyze the data and make side-by-side comparisons. We have only looked at one option at this time. We still have boundary changes or other shared services to study as well. I believe our districts work well together, and we've coordinated services to provide an outstanding K-12 education for all students in Klamath County. I also believe that our students who attend in the overlap area have had exceptional learning opportunities. We are unique in that we share this area, and we have shared this area for many years. This is a local issue. We're willing to continue to work together to study the issues and resolve them. I really do not believe that we need a state mandate. Thank you for allowing our two districts to come today.
Thank you.
With me today, I have our board chair, our attorney, Lori Theros, our attorney, Don Crane, mm-hmm. and our vice board chair, John Hicks. And with that, we're going to let Don go next.
I was going to say, if you would just, I just need to let you know that would you have only half an hour to hear this bill,
okay.
So if you summarize your points, and
okay.
it would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. My name is Don Crane, that's C-R-A-N-E. I do serve as the attorney for the Klamath Falls City Schools. And my primary objective in being here today is to explain to the committee the laws that already exist, and then to compare the bill that's before you. If you look at ORS Chapter 330, that is a chapter devoted to merger of school districts or change of school boundaries. I have a handout today, and it begins with change of boundaries and then goes to ESD procedures, petition requirements, and merger. And it outlines the statutes that primarily exist in 330, but also refer to other chapters in the ORS. The important part for the committee to be aware of is that Chapter 330 contains a procedure for either the citizens, the electors of the Klamath County, or the electors of the Klamath Falls City Schools District to initiate a procedure for merger or for boundary change by filing petitions with 500 signatures on that to do so. No such petitions have ever been filed to my knowledge, and I've been the attorney for several years. The other alternative are for the two district boards to request of the ESD, Southern Oregon Education Service District, for either a merger or a boundary change. The important part about the merger is that in this particular situation, Klamath Falls City Schools, that board would dissolve and that district would go away, and the entire Klamath County would be controlled by the county school board district. Under the boundary change scenario, if you think of an egg in this situation and consider that to be the overlap area in this particular situation, and then begin to draw lines across that egg, you have somewhat of an idea of the infinity of variations of possibilities for a change of boundary in this particular situation. It wouldn't necessarily be that all of the overlap would go to one district or to the other. There was a study in 1995 conducted by the two school boards, and at the conclusion of that study was that the schools within the overlap district, the elementary feeder schools, would go to the city school district. But that was not acted upon. The boards did not file requests with the ESD to start that procedure. No matter which procedure you use, either a petition filed by voters or requests filed by the school boards, the voters can file what's called a remonstrance petition with the ESD, in which case a vote of the entire population of the two districts would occur. If either of the districts voted no in that situation, the proposal would not pass and could not be suggested again for 1 year. That's the existing law at this time. House Bill 2576 does suggest a conclusion, and it is that either the boundaries will change or the districts will merge. There is no option for the voters of Klamath County to vote no, to say we're satisfied with the present situation, we do not want a change to occur. Unfortunately, the bill says that the school districts will accomplish either a change of boundary or a merger, but it does not suggest how that would occur. In other words, whether it would occur by the school districts filing a request with the ESD, or would the school districts between themselves make an agreement for change of boundaries or a merger, in which case you would, of course, disenfranchise the voters of the county and the city to determine their own destiny in that situation. The bill does not suggest how that would be accomplished. The other thing the bill doesn't do is to suggest what would happen if the districts do not accomplish either a merger or a change of boundaries within the allocated time. In other words, does it occur? Is there a committee appointed to determine what will happen? Are the voters left out of the situation? Again, that is not addressed in the bill. And so an enforcement mechanism of the bill is not contained within the bill itself. On the handouts that I brought, which begins with change of boundaries, there are time lines that were prepared by the attorney for the Klamath County School District as to how these mergers or boundary changes might occur, giving all of the legal rights to the various entities. The 2008 date was frankly unrealistic and could not be have been reached except under the most ideal of situations where nobody objected to the change or merger occurring. If there are votes, it would take much longer to accomplish what is suggested. The bill suggests that it's an emergency and must take place immediately. I would suggest to the committee that, again, the local voters have never considered that to be so important that they followed the procedures allowed to them in Chapter 330. And also, finally, the bill takes away the right to disagree that the merger or boundary take effect. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Lori?
Thank you. I'm Lori Theros, the chair of the Klamath Falls City School Board. I may echo the same sentiments of others here, but I would like to request that we either amend or abolish this bill. I don't feel that it's in the best interest of our county to have legislation take the place of our local decisions. As taxpayers in the overlap district, we know that it's confusing for them, but I do believe that we as school boards can educate and resolve these differences with our taxpayers without the legislature having to be involved. We at the city schools have had ongoing conversations with the county school board, and it's been a top priority to discuss boundaries, to include aligning our curriculum between the districts and having our calendars align. I don't see, however, how we could realistically meet the deadlines that are set by this bill and give our studies any kind of due process. I would also like to briefly say that I believe we are here today due to a small group of residents in Klamath County that have decided what is good for Klamath County. I've yet to hear anything that convinces me that this is for the good of our children. In fact, I've had numerous conversations with our overlap students and parents, and while they also find the funding confusing, they're genuinely upset about the possibility of changing school district from one to another and feel that any excess monies in this exchange may be just used up for building repairs instead of programs for kids. I believe that our meetings with the county school districts will help dispel any of those notions and if we have the time to study it properly. I trust that our local boards are making headway and feel that the introduction of this new law requiring us to merge or abolish the overlap will only create animosity in our districts. I fear that if the bill goes forward, then all the progress that we've made as two school districts will be lost. I believe that we can resolve the overlap issues in our own way and in our own good, speedy time frames. Please take into consideration how frustrating this had been for our citizens of our districts and trust in our local process to see it through. Thank you.
Thank you. John?
Thank you, Madam Chair Comp. I'll try and give you the Reader's Digest version.
Great.
So maybe you can understand this. You have an urban area, and within that you have
John, you need to say your name for the record.
John Hicks.
Thank you.
Yeah, have an urban area. You have a city boundary, and within the urban area is some county area. There were three school districts prior to 1996. There was the City Elementary Junior High. There was the Klamath Union Mazama High School District Number 2 that had this whole area. And then there is a county that includes this urban area and a much broader, very rural schools. Part of the two studies they spoke about that occurred in the 80s and 90s, that where there was a vote of the people in the 80s, and then the study that took place in 1995 recommended the completion of this study recommended that the elementary schools in the overlap area go into the city school district and be a part of that. That was put to the vote of the three districts at that time. At that time, the City Elementary and the Union High School merged. The county voted not to join at that point and do that. So here we are for the third time, another 10 or 12 years later, going through this same process. And as Mr. Crane explained, there obviously is an overwhelming piece of this that the public has come up to say we have to have this and how important this is. Regarding the remark of the Herald News, which we know, like the Oregonian and the Statesman Journal, accurately captures every nuance of the issue that you're well aware of with this, that the overlap issue was the fourth issue out of 10 as to why the bonds did not pass. By far for both, it was money, and it was 56-60% of the people, too much money. Overlap was around in the 9% of the people where that was the issue. If there is an unfair tax situation, I would think it's against the law, and somebody would raise that issue regarding that. Regarding the funding of the two, they're different, and definitely is a difference of opinion. I explained it with a simple algebraic equation to our board last night at our meeting. There really isn't a discrepancy when you've run through that. The language of this bill would create the exact opposite result of what the recommendations out of both prior studies had come up with. The language of the bill would require the merger of where the city board disbanded and the county board takes over. This is really, as was said before, a local issue. It's not a regional issue. It's not a statewide issue. I think we need to leave it to the local citizens. They have the tools. They have the legal means of accomplishing it if it's that important to them, if we're not able to resolve it satisfactorily. And lastly, we have mixed emotions about the merger, but I think it would be how would the citizens of Klamath County feel if the legislature mandated that the city school district take over the county school district and do that in that manner. I don't think it would go over well. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Well, and before you leave, in case we have some questions, I definitely want to thank you for the long drive you took today, or this morning, or last night. And, well, thank you. Okay. And we'll see if we have a couple of questions. Representative Dahlem, just a little clarification before.
Yes, a little. Having been through a county merger, isn't the option, the bill seemed to imply two choices, one, a merger or a boundary change. Hasn't the boundary, and it seems to me that you ask the ESD to open the boundary commission, which is the ESD, mm-hmm. and then they examine the boundary and make a change. Has that option, there is another option besides merger.
There is another option, and at this point, the only thing that's been studied in our committees, we have a planning committee and then the joint boards. As I said, there were three issues. There was a total merger, a boundary change, and then other services. We'll just be beginning to bring boundary possibilities back to the planning on April 21st. And so that's, as we've looked at that, and in the study in 95, they looked at several options for that. And so that, we haven't gone to the ESD yet. They're monitoring our progress in our study. And so far, just the collection of the data and the investigation has been just on trying to look at both districts and see what's there. It's been quite comprehensive.
We're trying to look at similarities and differences and how we operate and costs. And would we had the chairs.
Pardon me for clarification. Although I keep going to the notion, and I keep hearing testimony, that you have a merger only. But it seems like there is boundary change option available. And I understand you're going to say that, but then we get back into the merger. You can do a boundary change, realizing that there are two points that hit me very hard. The egg, because it is unconsolidated. There is no simple boundary. And the other was that newspaper comment, which I don't think any of the rest of you understand. But you haven't looked at that yet, but you will.
Yes.
Yes.
And in April, I'm told.
Yes, our next meeting will be April 21st. And Greg Beattie, the county superintendent, and I are to bring some things to the planning committee, some options.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the reassurance we're really looking for at this time. Yes, sir. But you have to come to the microphone.
Madam Chairman, I did want to clarify what Representative Dahlem said.
Could you say your name again?
Don Crane.
Thank you.
On the issue of the ESD, the ESD takes no initiative action. Actually, what it does is the two district boards come up with a proposal, which has to be the exact same proposal for the ESD to act on it. So the request has to be exactly the same, and it has to come from the two districts to the ESD. The ESD never makes any rulings on which proposal is right or anything of that nature.
If I may pursue that, Chair Comp, with one or two questions. Is there a provision where the boundary change can consider, let's move out of Klamath County, and we have a patron that has a major geographical feature that makes attendance at his assigned school district very difficult and wants to move into another one. Can that person request that the Boundary Commission open and examine his situation in particular?
I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank this panel. I appreciate your time and consideration. We have just one last person, Greg Thied.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to come and speak in support on behalf of House Bill 2576. My name is Greg Thiede, T-H-E-D-E, and I'm superintendent of the Klamath County School District. I think everyone's done a great job of describing the issue and the overlap. I just want to add to that the county district educates K-8 students in the overlap, and we have approximately 2,300 students that we're talking about. The city high school district, or the city school district, educates those students in grades 9 through 12 high school. There's around 1,000 students affected there. There are some overlap issues that affect the Klamath County School District that we're concerned about. One of those issues that you've heard about is funding. For the overlap students in grades K to 8, the Klamath County School District receives 0.9 funding. For the high school students in the overlap, the Klamath Falls City School District receives 1.2 funding. So even though the Klamath County School District is a K-12 district, we do not receive full funding for all of our students. That is an issue for us. Secondly is the impact on students, on parents, and on patrons. Obviously, I think we're going to disagree a little bit, but the coordination of educational programs, curricular, co-curricular, and athletic programs cannot be as smooth between Brixner Junior High, which is a county school, and Mazama High School, which is a city school. It just can't be as smooth as, say, between Henley Middle and Henley High, which are both county schools, or Ponderosa Junior High and Klamath Union High School, which are both city schools. Not in terms of curriculum, not in terms of in-service for staff, not in terms of activities, not in terms of music, athletics, all of those things, for obvious reasons. There is a lot of confusion among patrons, citizens, parents, you name it, in regard to attendance boundaries. For example, a student or parent could move into the Ferguson Elementary attendance area. Ferguson is a county elementary. However, students that attend Ferguson could go on to a city high school or could go on to a county high school. So you could have a family move into Ferguson thinking that they were going to go on to Mazama High School and in fact find out they're going to Henley. We have a situation with Shasta Elementary where students sitting in a sixth grade classroom go to three different high schools. It just doesn't make sense. Again, you've heard that we operate on different calendars. In the Klamath County School District, we have six-week grading periods. City District has 9-week. Those don't match up for grading days, for in-service days, for late starts, for staff in-service. It does make it difficult on our patrons. Lastly, a concern arose in November when both districts went for bond levies. And there was major confusion in the overlap because taxpayers in the overlap voted on both bond levies. And even though they paid prorated amounts, it created a situation that was extremely confusing to taxpayers and voters. And I think that was a major reason that people voted no. Now, were there other reasons? Obviously, the amount of money and those kinds of things. But obviously, in my opinion, in our district's opinion, the overlap did play an issue in that. Also have heard, as you've heard earlier, that it was a factor in patrons voting no on both bonds, county and city. And I believe that until the overlap issue is resolved in one way or another, both districts will have extremely difficult times passing bonds. As you've heard, both districts are working very hard to resolve this issue on the local level. We've had joint board meetings. The first one was in January, where each board adopted a plan of action. We've had planning committee meetings. I believe four have been held so far, with many more scheduled. The planning committee consists of two board members from each district, superintendents, board secretary, and our facilitator, Greg McKenzie from OSBA, and who's done a great job. As Cease referred to earlier, we were in the investigation stage. We've had our curriculum people, our maintenance people, our food service, our business, all the different departments work together to compile data so that our boards can make a decision later on down the road. We have talked about merger primarily, and I understand the issues that the city school district has with the way that the merger law reads. However, I believe we have some flexibility in terms of how our governance plan would be written to address some of those concerns. We are going to get into looking at boundary adjustments to see if we can resolve the overlap issue and still maintain two districts. But that will involve a lot of study. It will involve, in my opinion, needs to involve an equitable exchange of assets of students, and it would involve students switching districts. It would involve buildings going from one district to the other, but it would resolve the issue. We have future joint board meetings scheduled for April and May 23rd to study, get a study update, and a June 13th board meeting to review study results. That was our initial target date to make a decision to meet the 08 deadline, but now that we have the amendment, it's not so urgent. Once again, we support, Klamath County School District supports House Bill 2576. It resolves the overlap issue for both districts. It allows, at this point, for a local resolution, and I think the timeline's important to keep the process on track for completion. Thank you.
Thank you. Any closing comment or questions? Because my suggestion is this is something that many of us probably did not know the depth of the situation before today, and if we need to have another hearing at a different time, we can, rather than, if it needs further study. Representative Dahl and then Representative
Kennedy. I'd like to leave both school districts with a comment. Be afraid. As a board member, as a superintendent of schools, I came to this session swearing to uphold your right to local decisions. I've been involved in a handful, more than I care to count, that take local control from you. Your best bet is to go home and fix this. All of my colleagues, I won't look up and down the dais, will guarantee you that we want to leave this at home, but we will get involved. And it won't be done as well as you do it, I'll guarantee you.
We're working very hard. I want to emphasize that both districts, both boards, the communities are working very hard to resolve this on a local level. But it is an emotional issue, and it is a difficult decision. But it's been around for a long time, and we need to correct it.
Thank you. Last words, Representative Cannon.
Madam Chair, I would only request if we do come back to this, I would really appreciate a map. It would help me understand the situation here. And finally, resolving this may make resolving water disputes look easy.
Comment, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd encourage the districts to meet with Representative Garrard and see if it's possible to come up with an amendment to this bill that not only adjusts the date like the dash one does, but address the possibility of taking whatever proposed decision to the people of Klamath County. From what I'm hearing, the overriding desire is to get this resolved, and I'm confident that if the districts and the representative could come together on a framework to make sure a decision happens within a time period, I think we'd be willing to hear that again.
Yes, I think so, too. And just for the record, I did not give homework to Representative Garrard. Representative Buckley did.
That was my suggestion. It's my suggestion.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
With that, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2576, and I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3476. And because the next one is tightly connected, I'm also going to open a public hearing on 3307. And our staff is coming in the door, and he will give us a background on both of these bills.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3476 directs the Department of Education to establish farm-to-school program, directs the Department of Education to reimburse school districts for meals that utilize food produced or processed in Oregon, appropriates monies from the general fund to the Department of Education for reimbursements. It declares an emergency as effective July 1st, 2007. It has a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee, and I should note this is a teamwork bill. The other farm-to-school bill is House Bill 3307, which requires the State Department of Agriculture to develop and implement a program to improve utilization of locally grown farm products, including distribution of locally grown farm products to schools and other public institutions, in consultation with the Department of Education. This also has a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Just for the committee's notice, there, we are going to have a third bill that's very closely linked to these, but it is has some differences in the bill, so I'm going to keep that one separate for the time being. So with that, we're going to have, I believe, Representative Kotek come and testify and get us off on the right foot on these bills. No, I'm not letting Clem talk yet. The stage is yours.
Ladies first, huh? Thank you, Chair Comp, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tina Kotek. I'm State Representative for House District 44 in North and Northeast Portland. Pleased to be with you today, and I want to start off by thanking Representative Comp and Representative Dahlem and Representative Wisnant, who are all co-sponsors on House Bill 3476. It was a teamwork bill for the session, so it's my first one, so pleased to have everyone on board for the bill. This bill is, I think, a great approach to a variety of issues. It's going to be good for our Oregon's kids, it's going to be good for our schools, and good for Oregon farmers. This bill is an attempt to set up a farm-to-school program, which is becoming widely discussed around the country as ways to connect agriculture with the types of food that we serve to our students in schools. House Bill 3476, in conjunction also with House Bill 3307, will create a system of reimbursement to Oregon school lunch programs when they buy Oregon food from Oregon farmers. House Bill 3185, which is the school gardens program, which we'll also talk about later, is also a complement to that because it's working on providing students with hands-on experience in their own school garden. But back to 3476 and 3307, these are really integrated bills, and I'm really pleased that Representative Clem, we're all working together on this. This is really a great set of bills. Oregon is probably, as you know, one of the only states in the country that doesn't provide any state general fund support for the national school lunch and breakfast programs. And given that we've just passed House Bill 2650, which is setting some nutrition standards in the schools, this is actually a topic that came up quite a bit in my committee on this bill, because there was a lot of disgruntlement about, well, if we're going to fix the vending machines, we need to fix the school lunch and breakfast programs. But it came to light that we're not giving any state support, so oftentimes schools are really hard-pressed to provide, you know, high-quality, nutritious food based on the reimbursement they get from the federal government. What this bill will do will provide some supplement to those meals in the schools for the purpose of purchasing agricultural products in Oregon. So it's a win-win not only for our farmers but for our schools and ultimately for the nutrition and overall health of our students. This has been really interesting to work on this bill. I want to thank Deb Lippold, who's the executive director of Growing Gardens, who's a constituent who came forth with the general concept, and the group of people got together to work on this. There was a flurry of activity. There are going to be some amendments that they're going to run you through. And the intent was to make sure that the committee met the needs of a variety of stakeholders. So I'm going to leave it up to them to tell you what they came up with. But I have to say I've been really impressed with the synergy of the different types of folks coming together to talk about this bill, because it does reach into the agricultural community, education, folks who are just very interested in sustainability overall. So I just think this is a really wonderful bill. I urge your support, and I'm sure you're going to have some great testimony on the details of the bill. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Representative Kotek. And because I'm going to admit my weakness here, I didn't realize how tightly Representative Clem's bill was linked to this bill. If you wait, and we'll open the public hearing on, what is it? 31, House Bill 3185. Representative, I apologize.
Well, Chair Coffin, to be very honest, I mentioned earlier, sometimes bills have a, you know, a life of their own, and it's really been interesting to see all the different groups work together on these three bills together, and I don't know about Representative Clem, I just kind of step back and let them go at it. So.
Sure.
Well, and I do feel it's very important that we honor each bill as it is.
Absolutely.
Individually, so that we don't kind of think they're all together, so, because we will act on them separately.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian Clem, representing House District 21 here in Central and East Salem, and the several thousand people live in Marion County outside of Salem on to the east. You know, Marion County is, as some of you know, is the single largest producer of agricultural value for the state of Oregon. And we also are about to become here, probably within the year, the largest school district in the state of Oregon, surpassing Portland. And this is the perfect tie for not only Marion County, but every other county in Oregon as well. You know, I think a lot of the folks are going to talk about all the merits of the bills and all the ideas of combating childhood obesity, supporting local agriculture. I guess in general, this is sort of the bill, as indicated by every one of you that I actually got a chance to ask the last day before we had to turn these things in when it came out of Legislative Council, signed on, and so five of you, the other two I didn't get to find that day, so I apologize. Where people can really agree that Oregon products, Oregon farmers, and Oregon children should connect in their school lunch program. Some of the bills say, well, then the Oregon legislature needs to kick in a little money to help make that happen. Some of the bills don't say that. They say that, you know, we like to think there are opportunities available now that trying to get school districts to use funds that they have that are unrestricted to work with Oregon farmers. The problem is there really aren't very many, because we don't provide any dollars to our schools. So it would only be if they have some other source of funds that they can come up with to try and support the relationship between growers here in Oregon and themselves through purchasing. The funds are a little tight, and the ones that are there are restricted. So that's going to be the challenge for probably Ways and Means to have to deal with. I understand that. The particular bill that I brought to the table originally, and there's a variety of then, as Representative Kotek alluded to, discussions about, you know, how to make these things complement each other, was to establish a position as Department of Agriculture, work with the Department of Education, who has the knowledge about school district purchasing rules and who the school district purchasing managers are. And that bill, you know, essentially has a lower fiscal impact, but it's, again, it's going to be a challenge for the school districts to leverage resources on their own to do it. But I do believe there are opportunities to do that even without existing funds. We'll just have to work on ways and means for the rest of this. You know, with that, obviously, I have a background in agriculture. Just so when we get to the time when I'm voting on this, we're involved in growing fruit. I have no idea where it ends up going, because we give it to our co-op and they sell it. I don't think any of it goes to a school, and if they will, I'll never have any control over it, so I'll declare my potential conflict of interest that a pear may show up someday from my orchard in a school, but it will not be within my control, because the co-op guys take care of that stuff. In general, Oregon farmers feeding Oregon kids. I mean, what more could you ask for?
Thank you, Representative. Any questions before these two fine representatives leave our presence here? Representative Wisniak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good bills, although I wasn't asked to be on 3307. But you could learn, Brian. Tell you a personal story. I think this is a great program, and although Deschutes County is not growing much, as we drive towards Mount Hood from Deschutes County, we go through Jefferson County with all of its fields. And my son has always requested, and since you're going to have agriculture and education working here, and I appreciate the comments about how the kids are learning what takes place here, could we require all the fields along 97 to have signs saying what they're growing?
Yeah. That'd be a possible amendment, please.
Farmers don't like mandates so much. We're open on all three of them.
Yes, we are.
I should just comment on the last remaining one, the 3185. This isn't so much about buying Oregon farm products. It's about the schools growing them themselves, having the kids learn about gardening and agriculture in the process of doing it, visiting a farm to get some tips. I also like the concept, and we do this a little bit here in Salem with artists, where there's a visiting artist who comes in and works with the school. You have a visiting farmer who comes in and helps them tend the field or garden, depending on how much space they have available. So it's another spin on the same idea. There'll be folks who testify, I think, about places that work. Senator Vakian's daughter apparently has got one in his school, and he had seen one of the flyers and grabbed me and said, you know, what a wonderful thing it is for his daughter. So that's that third bill, is kind of the classroom experience there at the school.
Thank you so much. With that, thank you for bringing these bills forward, and we're going to start with our next panel. You have an amendment for
3307. Yeah, -1 amendments. Clarifies that the position would be at the Department of Ag, but they would be working with the Department of Education. That wasn't really clear in our first bill, and we cleaned up some of the whereases and put in some new whereases about obesity and some of the other facts.
Thank you, Representative. I will connect with you whereas we move this bill.
And then, Jericho, we'll have amendments coming on 3476, but as Representative Clem mentioned, it's making sure we have the capacity in both the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Education. So we're giving you fun things to work with here. So, you know, you can mix and match, stick them together. So
that's what schools are about.
That's right.
So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
To you on a procedural issue, we're going to get the amendments. Will we see this bill soon again? Or do you have...
I don't know. I want to hear the rest of the testimony before we make any decisions, Representative.
I'm predisposed. I want to move the bill.
Okay. Well, now, I don't know if they brought...
I'm going to hear the testimony first.
That's what I would like to do, but if they brought you food, please share it. Okay. We're going to hear from our school food panel. That's Christy Obie and Renee Bassinger and Joyce Daugherty. Oh, Deborah Kane, you're supposed to be first. Do you have anybody you want to have join you, Deborah?
Chair Comp, it had been my intention to introduce the panel.
Okay, that's wonderful.
Chair Comp and members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you this morning. My name is Deborah Kane. I am the Vice President of Food and Farms at EcoTrust, and I am also a W.K. Kellogg Foundation Food and Society Policy Fellow. And I'm just so happy that we're open on all three bills. While I will speak to you about any one, any two, or all three, I'm very glad that I can address all three at this time, if you don't mind, because we believe that all three bills are entirely complementary and form a perfect package. And therefore, I do strongly support all three bills, House Bill 3476, 3307, and 3185. The coalition that I represent, Oregon Farmers Feeding Oregon Children, has prepared panel testimony related to the three separate bills. And so, with your permission, we have a schools panel, an agriculture panel, and then a school gardens and garden-based curriculum panel that are prepared to testify. Related to House Bill 3476, what you'll hear from the schools panel is what it's like to implement USDA's school breakfast and lunch program on a daily basis. You'll hear that schools across the state are very interested in bringing Oregon agricultural products into the lunchroom, but lack the resources to do much more than pilot programs. You'll hear that the Oregon Department of Education is ready, willing, and able to help execute the program under consideration with House Bill 3476. And as you listen to the school's perspective, please keep in mind that which Representative Kotek and I think Representative Clem both mentioned, and that is that Oregon is one of a handful of states that does not allocate additional resources to school food. From what we've seen, state reimbursement above and beyond the federal required minimum is typically between 5 and 15 cents in other states. In California, it's 13 cents. In Pennsylvania, 13 cents. Massachusetts allocates an additional 6 cents, Indiana an additional 7, and Wisconsin an additional 5 cents. And as we've heard today, in Oregon, it's an additional 0 cents. I hope that we can change that. Schools that participate in the USDA School Breakfast and Lunch Program receive approximately $2.35 for every meal that they serve. But by the time they've turned on the lights and washed the dishes and paid their staff, that leaves approximately $1 left to spend on the actual food. House Bill 3476 requests a state appropriation of up to 7 cents per meal served to get us to a whopping $1.07 to spend on food for our children. We're requesting this additional allocation for two reasons. First and foremost, because a dollar for food is simply not enough. And second of all, again alluded to by Representatives Clem and Kotek, with regard to federal procurement regulations, they actually make it impossible for school food service directors to preferentially source Oregon products. Yet we have an unapologetic preference for Oregon products. I also want to remind the committee that 43% of the meals that we serve in Oregon go to children participating in the free and reduced program. Now, I send my daughter to school every day with her sack lunch full of whole grains and cheese and fruits and vegetables, but I can afford to do that because I don't work three jobs. I have the time in the morning, and I can afford to do it because I have the resources to buy great food for my child. But almost half of Oregon's parents can't do that for their children. Related to 3307, House Bill 3307, what you'll hear from our panel is that just as the Oregon Department of Education is ready, so too is the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And the agricultural sector broadly defined, whether it's canola seed producers from eastern Oregon or the livestock community or fruit and vegetable folks out of the Dalles, the entire agricultural community is also ready to support these bills. The Oregon Department of Agriculture will be responsible for helping develop the rule such that the legislative intent is intact. And now the intent, to be clear, is to support the Oregon agricultural economy while we're supporting our schools. The intent is to keep Oregon dollars in Oregon. Today you'll hear from a food processor who does over $100 million worth of business on an annual basis, and you'll hear from a very small fresh fruit and vegetable producer from the Willamette Valley. Two very different types of operations, two very different scales. The bills are for all of Oregon agriculture. And finally, related to House Bill 3185, you'll hear that school gardens, along with agriculture and food-based curriculum, will help make sure that the changes that we're proposing in the cafeteria don't happen in isolation. It's actually very simple. The child who plants, tends, and harvests kale from the garden is much more likely to eat that kale when he or she sees it show up in the cafeteria. Studies show that children who have a sense of agriculture and understand food are much more likely to make good choices in the lunchroom, but also good choices, nutritionally good choices in their daily lives well into the future. Now, I've been traveling down to Salem from Portland on I-5 quite a bit these last few weeks as we've been working on these bills, and I keep noticing a big, huge billboard on the side of the road. It's not a billboard that tells me about Oregon agriculture. It's actually a billboard by a grocery store. And it's got this luscious picture of Oregon strawberries and a tagline that reads, "It's time." And I would argue that that billboard is hopeful at best. In Oregon, fresh strawberries are a June delight, not a March or April affair. House Bill 3185 helps us create a food literate child. A child who knows that they live in one of the most diverse and abundant agricultural regions in the world. A child who knows that fresh strawberries are best favored in the summertime. We have an opportunity here today to go from catching up to what other states are doing to far exceeding what is happening in other places. I would argue that's largely because of the three bills under consideration, not because of anyone individually. The bills before you are based on sound research and employ proven strategies. The three bills are wholly complementary. They form a perfect trio. They enjoy unprecedented support from a wide variety of sectors. Chair Comp, members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I strongly urge a do pass recommendation on all three bills.
Deborah, I just have one question. We did have We do have on our agenda to move two other bills in a work session. How much time was each panel going to require?
You know, they are so on message, Chair Comp and members of the committee, they are so on message, I think that we could run through each panel 10 minutes each.
We'll make it work. We'll make we'll make it work with 10. 10 would be wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With your permission, I would like to introduce the schools panel.
Absolutely, please.
Christy Obink with Portland Public Schools, Clara Columbus with the Jervis School District, and Joyce Sardi with ODE.
Chair Kopp, members of the committee, thank you very much. I'm going to keep my points very simple because I think that the three folks before me said it all. But as the food service director, excuse me, my name is Christy Obing.
There
I'm
you
a
go.
Registered dietitian, and I operate the lunch program in Portland Public Schools. And as a food service director, the two points I want to make is all children matter. It's not a welfare program. I think all children need to have access to healthy, nutritious foods in the lunchroom. And I would present to you that when parents who can afford to buy lunch have confidence in the lunch in the lunchroom, that we're serving whole foods, whole grain foods, foods that are as fresh as they possibly can be because they've come from our neighbors and they come from people who really care. I think then those parents will send money more often so I can get the Deborah Kane, Zoe Kane into my cafeteria. And when that happens, when all kids are eating in the cafeteria, then that creates an economy of scale for me in the cafeteria. Okay, and then I can spread my costs over, my fixed costs over more meals. That does not mean a dollar is still enough. I need to improve the quality of the food on the plate. That just means if I can get 7 more cents, if I can start purchasing products from Oregon and increase the confidence with parents, they start sending money, I start spreading that over my fixed costs over a greater number, then there are a few more pennies I can grab to put right back on the plate. And I see it as an upward spiral. Therefore, I urge you to pass this wonderful group of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I am Claire Columbus. I am the food service director for the Jervis School District. Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing us today. First of all, I have worked in the Jervis School District for 28 years. I've been in school food service feeding children. And in Jervis, in my district, we only have 1,100 students in K-12. 80% are on free or reduced price lunches. So we have a high poverty rate in our county. And for some of you, if you don't know where Jervis is, it's just north of Salem. We cover 65 square miles, and it's prime agriculture property there. Last summer, we began, well, last summer I attended a talk on farm to school. It really perked my interest. In Jervis, we talk about all the time in our community how we don't have a lot of businesses to partner with. And so finally we said all we have is farmers. So here the farm to school opportunity presented itself, and I approached a local farmer, and we started buying local produce last summer, and they kept us in produce up through December. It was great. The kids loved it. The parents loved it. It was just win-win. And the thing is, the farmer didn't really look at the school district as a viable customer. It wasn't like we were looking for something free. It was win-win on both sides. So, our school wellness policy, again, that came into play last year, it encourages us to promote fruit and vegetable consumption among our students. Again, we could use the additional funding to help promote that. We do what we can, but it'd be great to have the additional funding. And then the last thing I'd like to say, I've been a part of a school food service delegation that has visited many countries. And when I talk about the area that we live in, they are envious of what we do here. And I just hope you will support these bills so we can continue to do what we do, feed kids.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Kopp, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joyce Doherty, and I am the director of the Child Nutrition and Food Distribution Programs. These programs are located within the Office of Finance and Administration and the Department of Education. I'm also a registered dietitian, and you have heard from two food service directors who currently procure Oregon products. The interest in farm to school is not just from Christie or from Claire's programs. They're from all over the state. Recently, this past year, the Department of Education conducted a survey with food service directors in terms of asking them about farm-to-school programs. And overwhelmingly, the majority of school districts, school food service directors said yes, that's something that we are interested in. However, the main barrier, the number one barrier, almost 85% was the lack of funds or the inability to pay for the products. So one of the things that, and I'm going to just be very brief here, is that ODE, Oregon Department of Education, Child Nutrition Program, we have experience in monitoring and conducting reviews and providing technical assistance and training. We have systems in place. Two, the Oregon Department of Education Child Nutrition Programs will work closely with the Department of Agriculture and other partners. And three, we are willing, ready, and able to implement House Bill 3476. The bill benefits Oregon's children, schools, farmers, and communities, and I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Well, I think the one question that was in many of our minds and has just been answered because we just received a copy of the Dash 2 amendments, and on page 2, line 7, it says it's going to be 7 cents for every meal served. So I know that in the original bill it said 15 cents, so this is a clarifying point that had a couple people puzzling here, but
yep.
I am pleased to hear the work that the department has front-loaded the system on, and so that, because that was the other thing, the question that's going through my mind is like, is the department ready to gear up on this? So thank you. Appreciate it. And with that, Deborah, did you want to introduce the next panel? You did such a great job.
So the second panel that I'd like to present. Second panel relates to
a little closer to the microphone.
Do you want me to speak in there? So the second panel relates to the Oregon Department of Agriculture's role and agriculture's role more broadly. We have today Dalton Hobbs from the Department of Agriculture. We have Peter Truitt from Truitt Brothers and David Schonk from Bumblebee Farm.
Thank you so much. You did that very well. And gentlemen, just make sure you say your name for the record, and you don't have to tell us how many profits you have or how if you went in the red or anything last year.
Madam Chair, Agriculture.
Except for the Department of Agriculture, right.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Dalton Hobbs, Assistant Director of Agriculture, and we didn't go in debt.
That's right answer.
Thank you. I'm here today to provide information about how this package of benefits can, or this package of bills can benefit Oregon agriculture. You've heard, I think, some of the unprecedented enthusiasm from the ODE and their ability to manage the school and cafeteria side of this legislation. I'd like to add that the ODA is equally equipped and equally excited and has the expertise and experience to handle the food and the farm side of this legislation. We would envision our role as largely developmental, working with both the ag and food processing sectors to build the infrastructure necessary to ensure that foods from Oregon work their way into the school lunchrooms around the state. We'd anticipate working closely and in concert with the agriculture and food processing sectors and our partners within the school nutrition community to build meaningful administrative rules to implement the legislation so that the intent of this legislation was actually fulfilled on the ground. Over the past several years, our agency has hosted workshops and meetings with schools, fresh market producers, and food processors to explore how more Oregon foods can be utilized in Oregon schools. And I think that finally, this legislation would give wings to these earlier efforts and those of the Oregon Environmental Council and others to really establish a full-time program within our agency so that we can oversee these efforts as well as in the Department of Education and ensure that there's innovative purchasing and supply stream systems put in place where growers and processors could efficiently produce and supply more Oregon food products for our classrooms. You've heard earlier the win-win concept, and this is indeed a classic win-win for our state because it would support all of Oregon agriculture and increase opportunities for farmers, ranchers, fishers, at the same time that processors like Peter and others will benefit through new opportunity supply schools. So this legislation will mean that our children will have enhanced access to Oregon-grown and processed foods, which we all know are the best in the world. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Chair Kampf and members of the committee, thank you very much for your time regarding this important matter. My name is David Schonk, and I'm raising food on a 30-acre family farm in Troutdale right now with my wife, Susie, and my two daughters, Zia and Gracie, 10 and 5 years old. We run a certified organic community-supported agriculture farm with sales to local restaurants and food co-ops right now. Our core values at the farm center on healthy ecology, nutrition, and education. We invite classrooms to the fields from time to time. And when school tours come out to the farm, I love to see the children pulling carrots and enthusiastic about knowing where some of their food comes from. Once when I asked the students if they'd eat those same carrots they saw in my fields, if those carrots were available in the school cafeteria, every hand was raised. It is with that direct connection that we can share the continuum of tradition about food. By providing support for the farm-to-school program, you are helping small, local agricultural producers survive. This is because the program invests knowledge into the future of farming in Oregon. By strengthening the bond of the producer and the informed consumer, we can act on that important opportunity to support the next generation. Please support the House Bills 3185, 3307, and 3476 with a due pass. Thank you for your support.
Thank you so much.
Chairman Kampf, representatives, my name is Peter Truitt. Our company is Truitt Brothers here in Salem. And we have an employment base of between 700 and 1,200 people on a year-round basis. Currently, it's about 700. And we purchase raw materials from Oregon growers, between 18 and 100 different growers between the Willamette Valley and the Columbia Gorge. And it sounds like there's plenty of support for this bill. Maybe the best thing I can do is see if somebody can tell Representative Clem that I'll see what I can do to make sure his pears get to Oregon schools, because we process pears. And we buy a lot of pears from Hood River, so who knows? Maybe we're already processing his pears. The products that we produce that would benefit most directly and most immediately from this set of bills are the blue-leg green beans that are grown here on the Willamette Valley and the Bartlett pears that I just mentioned. My testimony on that part will amount to really a little more than an anecdote, but it's true. We don't even bother trying to sell our products to Oregon schools because it's been a waste of time. On the other hand, we sell the highest value green beans that we process here in the Willamette Valley to school systems in Georgia and in Texas and in other states. And the simple reason for that is that those school systems have local control and are all in favor of developing trusting relationships with suppliers of products, consistent high-quality products. And we get a pretty good price for our product by shipping it, frankly, right through the backyards of bean processors in Arkansas and other Midwest processors. And that should provoke some questions. Why wouldn't Oregon want to have those high-quality Willamette Valley green beans served to Oregon children? It took all of adolescence to train my son how to like Willamette Valley green beans. The other part of our operation that could benefit directly would be the part of our operation that operates on a year-round basis in which we're producing value-added meals here in Salem. at two plant locations in Salem, frankly utilizing raw materials from all over the world, in some cases beef from South America, and many cases frozen vegetables from the Willamette Valley, but most of it comes from outside of the state of Oregon. Nonetheless, a large quantity of surplus materials are distributed to Oregon schools by the USDA Child Nutrition Program every year. And through diversion programs, those raw materials could be diverted to us, with which we could make products that we're currently making for other people and make them for Oregon schools as well. So needless to say, I'm in support of the bills because it would have a direct impact on our growers and on our company. And these bills combine with some pretty hard-nosed evaluations of the bureaucracy that directs these sort of purchases could put Oregon schools back on our marketing map. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Minnis, you had a question?
Well, I think you just answered it. I was wondering what the obstacles were in working with our local school districts to market your own produce.
Two things, Chairman Kopp, Representative Minnis. And those two things are number one, the bid system. By and large, Oregon schools, like every other school system within the United States, operates on a bid system. And the bid system is pretty simple. The lowest price gets the business. And frankly, we don't choose to participate in that game because we can derive a better value for our product in other parts of the country. We're not the lowest cost producer in the United States when it comes to canned green beans or canned pears. And other people in other parts of the country can produce a canned green bean for less money than we can. The second really essential part of the answer is the bureaucratic structure of the school systems within Oregon compared to other states. We have developed we developed supply relationships with school systems in Georgia over 25 years ago that persist to this day. And some of those very same school districts that bought this particular bean that I made reference to anecdotally have bought it consistently year in and year out for over 25 years. Those kind of relationships, by and large, don't exist in sufficient quantities to warrant our time.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you find that they have a preferred client or person they like to work with, and so that's why it's hard to break into that? I'm asking a question you may not be able to answer.
I can answer part of it by admitting to you that, frankly, we haven't paid attention to the Oregon school business for a long, long time, and I really don't know. It may well be that those relationships exist potentially, but we haven't looked into it.
Thank you. Representative
Dolan? Yes, I'd like to ask Dalton a question, if I might. We've talked about fruits and vegetables, and I had in my mind in season, but canned sounds good. Any provisions for beef poultry, pork? Has that been looked at, Dalton?
Chair Comp, Representative Dallum, I think that we could explore all of the foods that are produced here in Oregon, including beef and even seafood products. And I think that that's the... promise of this legislation is it would allow us to explore those kind of relationships in sourcing and supply relationships that Peter was talking about that I think would be very, very important. Right now, most of the beef, my understanding, that comes into the school systems here in Oregon is surplus or so-called free beef that comes from the USDA. And we could... work on that in other sectors as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, panel. We have one last one. And Deborah, if you play that one more time. You're younger than she is.
And Vanna. Mm-hmm. Chair Kopp and members of the committee, it's my pleasure to introduce the third panel, the third entirely convincing, well-rehearsed, articulate panel, if I do say so myself, Nellie Williams and Tammy Carr, and finally, Michelle Marcustan.
Chair Comp and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity
to testify before you today in full-hearted support of House Bill 3185 in conjunction with House Bill 3476 and 3307. My name is Nellie Williams of Springfield, Oregon. I am the Executive Director of the School Garden Project of Lane County, a nonprofit that works very closely with schools to build, maintain, and teach in school gardens. Every single day I'm out in the gardens and I get to see the positive impact that gardens have on kids and teachers. We work closely with 9 schools and we work in a more limited way with 13 additional schools. In the past year, we've had over 20 schools in the area contact us asking for help with their school gardens, whether it's building or maintaining or teaching in their school gardens. But because of our limited time and resources, we're unable to help them. But these schools really need help, and others across the state do as well. And they need funding for supporting the physical garden structure and tools and things like that that go with it. They need help assigning staffing responsibility for the gardens. They need also help conducting teacher training so teachers are comfortable being out in the gardens with students. House Bill 3185 will provide the resources necessary for schools to create and use successful, sustainable outdoor living classrooms. I have an unending supply of stories I could tell you about the positive impacts gardens have on kids. But for today, I'm just going to share one, although I'd be happy to share some later. This story is a story of a very earnest first grader. After spending the afternoon harvesting corn with the Walterville Elementary first grade class, this bright-eyed boy with blonde hair and hugging a ear of corn came up to me and kind of tugged on my elbow, and he motioned for me to bend down, and I bent down, and he told me very seriously and earnestly, he said, "This day was the best day of my life." Wow. And I still kind of get teary-eyed from it, but fortunately, these moments aren't one of a kind. They happen every single day in the gardens that I work in, and I'm just thankful for the opportunity to come up here and tell you about my experiences and say how much I support these three bills.
Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
One quick question. Do you have the kids weed?
I do.
Do they like that part?
As long as you say dig the weeds, they love to dig.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Smart. It didn't work with my kids.
I have to say, in all my years of gardening, yeah.
All the weeds.
Thank you. Go ahead. Please proceed.
I'm going to let you hold. I have a prop for you. Chair Comp and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tammy Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Agriculture in the Classroom Foundation that is headquartered in Corvallis at Oregon State University. I want to express my support for the bills and for the three bills before you today and to comment specifically on House Bill 3185. We are ready, willing, and able to participate and to support this effort. Oregon agriculture is a very rich industry, but did you know that more children today have been to a zoo than to a farm? A giraffe is as exotic as a cow or a sheep. Agriculture in the Classroom has curriculum and reference materials for K-12 teachers, including lesson plans centered around Oregon's specialty crops and production regions, a Grown in Oregon poster that is free for classroom teachers and features the leading and unique commodities from each county, a free loan resource library that includes curriculum, lesson plans, videos, CDs, DVDs, books, and much more. The plant section is extensive and includes a gardening and horticulture series, a book describing how seeds are formed, how they grow, and how they make food with instructions for related hands-on science projects, and much, much more. Our library also has a vast list of nutritional materials available for K-12 teachers statewide. Our resources are listed on our website and can be ordered online. In the materials I've attached to my testimony is our teacher resource guide that you've been flipping through. It provides a complete listing of all the materials that we have available through our free loan resource library. We believe that our organization can provide much of the resources to complement the efforts that would be envisioned under House Bill 3185. The purpose of agriculture in the classroom is to help young people gain a better understanding of agriculture, the source of our food and fiber, and its impact on our economy and our daily lives. The mission of our program is strongly aligned to House Bill 3185. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you.
Thank you for all your curriculum development.
Chair Comp, members of the committee, hello, my name is Michelle Markiston Ratcliffe, and as one of a handful of people earning a PhD with doctoral research on school gardening, I'm here as a food and garden-based educational expert. And I just want to clarify that when we're referring to school gardens or food and garden-based educational programs, we're talking about programs that integrate the core curriculum, so math, science, language arts, and increasingly physical education, with garden-related activities of planting, tending, so the weeding, the harvesting, and the consuming of the garden produce in classrooms, in cafeterias, or in the garden itself. And the number of school gardens and farm-to-school connections in Oregon is on the rise. And this is in part due to interests of diverse groups who utilize these programs to address multiple societal issues related to education, obesity, food security, environmental degradation, and economic development. And for your convenience, I have submitted a written testimony that provides an extensive literature review, 25 riveting pages, actually, on how and why these programs work. And from just in short, from this review, you will see that school gardens exert numerous positive effects on the physical, curricular, and social learning environments of schools. And as such, they result in positively contributing to the development of the whole child. They also can increase students' academic achievement, including their test scores and GPA, and it promotes healthy behaviors such as increasing their fruits and vegetable consumption and increasing their physical activity. And the literature further suggests that school gardens and farm school programs can affect community and bioregional level variables, including promoting public health, ecosystem health, local economic development, and social capital. And while these results can be achieved through other programs, school gardens offer a number of benefits that actually make them better choices. They're relatively inexpensive. They can be integrated into an enhanced existing curriculum. And they can be implemented in any school anywhere in the state. And the nature of this pedagogy permits teachers with little or no gardening experience to learn alongside students. And garden programs also facilitate active involvement of parents and families from diverse educational and socioeconomic backgrounds. And perhaps the most distinctive characteristic of school garden programs is they connect people with real, ongoing natural processes, and there's no substitute for learning while nurturing living organisms in the natural world. And these factors taken together provide compelling rationale for, I hope, you guys supporting these programs. And last year, the California State Legislature was so encouraged by the potential of school garden programs that they actually appropriated $15 million to have a school, a garden in every school. And what I would submit to you is that's great. However, it's unlikely that simply having a garden is going to result in all the desired outcomes. What we do in the garden that matters. And research is still being done to distinguish what program elements are most effective, but there are some things we know that work. And again, for your convenience, in my written testimony, I've outlined a handful of the program elements that we know contribute to successful programs. So just in sum, House Bill 3476, 3307, and 3185 really provide an unprecedented opportunity for us here in Oregon for farmers, advocates, and educators from diverse fields to successfully address interrelated issues associated with education, health, and the environment. I too strongly urge your vote for due pass on all three.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And congratulations for a PhD.
I have to admit this. I actually postponed my defense last week so that I could be here to do this with you guys.
Oh. We can get you a copy of this video.
Okay.
Representative. That would be great.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, my wife's an elementary principal, and they have had a garden that I helped get set up with a whole lot of people in front of their school, and it really has been a nice community thing. I think that the thing that I talk to her about most, because they have worked it out such that a 4-H group out of the school mm-hmm. helps take care of it. But so much of our growing season happens to be the time when we don't have kids in school.
Yeah.
So right now it's preparation and getting everything going. The kids can be a part of that. They can do all that. But if you don't figure out a way in which you can take care of it over that summer time so that you're ready for the harvest, because and that seems to be, and I think that we have ways of doing that, and their school has made it a community project so that they have community members and their kids kids, so it's families that have different times when they're responsible for taking care of it. So, I mean, you can get that worked out, but there's a lot more to it, I think, somebody, than just having the garden, like you said, in California. Since we don't have year-round schools, and since, at least on the coast, and I would assume it's the rest of the place, some of these other places can get two or three crops in a year. The coast, we're lucky to get that one in, so... And where her school is, which is right on the coast, it's really harder. So getting some of those other kinds of things, and I hope that there's material in here that helps with identifying some of those resources and ways to do things, and I'll try to share that with her, too, and her committed staff that make this happen. So, thanks.
Well, and I have to share the obvious other part is that when you study ancient Greece and you know about dikes and water irrigation, Eastern Oregon can still use some help in that area, too.
Well,
thank you. We always use more water.
A comment, please. We in Eastern Oregon at the Chenoa School District had a garden. We solved Arnie's riddle of the vegetables. We had a flower garden.
edible flowers.
Edible.
Thank you.
But one more comment.
Yes, sir.
I just want to say that the flowers are nice, and they do some of those, and it's really nice. But the problem, the reality is exactly what you said, is when the kids go out and take something out of that garden and walk back into the school and clean it and prepare it and cut it up and eat it. I mean, that is the difference. And that's when all of the social comes together. So thank you for all your efforts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we do have just a couple of people left. There's John McCauley and Ellen Hassan from the Secretary of State's office and Joel Fisher.
For those of you that know John McCauley, no, I'm not John McCauley.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. John
was here.
John had a conflict, and he pulled me off the bench and asked me to be what I'm afraid may be a poor substitute. Just for the record, I should introduce myself. I'm Rick Jacobson, recently retired president and CEO of Norpak Foods. And I'm here at John's request to offer the support of the Ag Co-op Council of Oregon, which is made up of cooperatives throughout the state, including Pendleton Grain Growers, Oregon Cherry Growers, Diamond Fruit. Thought I'd mention some of the ones that are close to the Dalles. and, of course,
you might get some pears in there, yeah.
And we'd need to do that.
Cranberries
are so good. I would say also, in addition to the support of the Ag Co-op Council, it's important for Norpak to step forward and indicate our enthusiastic support for this. Norpak, as some of you may know, is the largest frozen fruit and vegetable packer in the state, including a canned packer also. We're international in our scope. We're owned by 240 farm families right here in the Willamette Valley, Washington County, and East County. We farm, I'm not going to do what Peter did and express what our total revenues are, but suffice it to say that we pay, we have about a $55 million payroll here in the state of Oregon. And we certainly would like to see some of those folks that work for us, their children have access to some of the great products that they produce. So I would, again, offer our enthusiastic support. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Elon Hassan for the Secretary of State's office. Secretary sends his apologies for not being able to be here today. He was in transit, but he really wanted to come and testify. And in part, as due, he's the chair of the Oregon Sustainability Board. And, you know, in our travels across the state, you know, we had one particularly really good meeting in Prineville with the Oregon Rural Advisory Group. And it became really clear that the connection between our rural economy, our agricultural economy, are very much connected, and that's why these bills are really good, because it really brings in that connection between rural Oregon and the schools, and that's an important thing. It's important to remember that agriculture is the second largest contributor to our state's economy. And the other thing that the Secretary really wanted to emphasize is the multiplier effect that goes with these dollars. You know, if every dollar spent here, there's studies that show it yields $2.50 in economic activity. So it's a win-win in that sense. And also, you know, the more we keep up our agriculture, our agricultural economy, the more we keep up our beloved agricultural landscape. And then just two final notes. You know, the Sustainability Board works on making the state more sustainable onto itself. And, you know, buying local means we're going to be buying from within the state and not importing it from outside the state and outside the country. That also is going to have a positive effect on the emissions we have from the trucks and the cars coming from all over the world to feed us. It would be a lot better if we were more self-sufficient. And then I've instructed, most importantly, local food from local farmers just tastes better, and that's why he is a large supporter of the bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair Comp and members of the committee, thank you for having me today. For the record, my name is Joel Fisher, and I live in House District 44. I'm here to talk about my experience as a fourth and fifth grader in Mr. Olson's fourth and fifth grade split class at Chief Joseph Elementary, where he read to us, rather than a typical novel suited for fourth and fifth graders, a technical manual on how to build worm boxes and the benefits of vermiculture composting. One day, Mr. Olson brought in two garbage cans to the classroom, one filled with garbage from the school's cafeteria and one filled with compost from his own backyard. Each of us students went and put our heads into the garbage cans, took a big whiff, and then told him which one of the two cans smelled better. And to the surprise of many of us, the compost smelled better than the garbage can. I didn't write this down in my testimony, but 4 years spent at Oregon State University, about one to every 3 days, you get a pretty strong smell of manure. Mm-hmm. Just fine for me. I was pretty used to the having my head in compost and smelling good. Next, Mr. Olson had our class work collaboratively writing an essay that earned us a $1,000 grant that let us build a fence around part of our schoolyard. Next, inside the fence, we built a giant worm box, and students took turns each day collecting organic non-meat scraps, meat attracts rats, from the cafeteria to go into the giant worm box. And we also collected coffee grounds from the teacher's lounge. Next to the worm box, we planted Chief Joseph Elementary's first school garden. We used worm castings and compost from the worm box to fertilize our garden, and we sold the worms, which grew at an exponential rate, at our school's fundraisers. My classmates and I, they didn't sell very well. We ended up giving them out as awards and prizes. My classmates and I learned skills that many of us continue to use today to plant our own family gardens, and we gained an appreciation for vegetables and locally grown food. Although we can't have a Mr. Olson at every school here in Oregon, we can implement this school garden program. And as I sat here and listened to more testimony, I was thinking of all the other things that came along with this. We got a math lesson, learning about the growth rates of worms, a science lesson on how worms reproduce, among all the other things that go along with school gardens. We had rabbits in our classroom, and we used the rabbit droppings because they provided more nitrogen for the plants. I mean, this was really like in-depth, intense, science and chemistry lesson around school gardens. Of course, the subject of English was covered as we wrote a grant that earned us $1,000. Recycling is where reuse, recycling the organic scraps in the school cafeteria. We learned teamwork, how to participate with our community. My little brother went on to start raising chickens that fed me every day in high school, which was great. And we planted a cover crop during the winter so that this garden was going all year long, and collaborated with the community to plant flowers and such in the summer. So just wanted to say, good bill should pass.
Thank you. Well, what a perfect example to finish our testimony with today. Representative Roblin?
Well, since I carried a vermiculture bill last year, what kind of worms did you use?
They were red wiggler worms.
A little red. Oh, the right
one. And I actually, as I'm planting my garden this week, I've been searching everywhere to find red wiggler worms. I ended up going back to my elementary school to go dig some up with my teacher.
Oh. Wow. There are some other places to get them now, actually. There's a guy that does that and has a little company, so we'll let you know.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Committee, we have a choice here. We have, approximately 7 minutes left. We could take motions and work a couple of these bills. Do you have a feeling, or you want more time?
Madam Chair, if you wanted to send these to the full ed, that's fine as well. We don't even have to work them. We can just grab them from full ed, unless you want to work them here in your committee. I think Mr. Olson has them scheduled already, anticipating the possibility.
So do we need to pass them out to get to full ed, or they just automatically can go there?
We have to have motion moving to full, right?
Will that give us opportunity to give them a full endorsement? I really want those people to... I have the feeling we're going to get a full endorsement. I don't want that carried on.
Well, just for clarification, we have a few minutes. We could take motions and work them right now.
Let's go for the first one.
Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on, if you give me the numbers, Staff Olson. Okay, going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3476, 3307, and 3185, and I will open up a work session on 3476.
Are we doing work sessions on these ones today?
Oh, on these ones?
Oh, that's
yes.
Right.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the other two on the list.
Right, no. Me too.
We're going to get to the other two today, Madam Chair?
We won't get to those right. two All today. Right. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No, you're doing fine.
You rock and roll.
I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 3476.
There's been a motion to put the dash two amendments into 3476. Discussion. Objections? Seeing no objections, the dash twos are in House Bill 3476. Representative Roblin?
I move House Bill 3476 to the Education Committee with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Thank you. There's a motion to move 3476 as amended to the full House committee. Is there any discussion? Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to note, members, that our budget co-chair has said that when we ask for a new program or a payment, we should also be sending her suggestions on how we might pay for it. So just a note from our budget co-chair.
We're going to sell those worms.
I'll buy two.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support these bills. I think it's a great idea, but I do think that I would like some information, and I'll take it offline or in the office tomorrow sometime from the staff. We went from $11 million to $8 million, and I didn't understand why that was done. And I tried to figure up how much that is per mill or how many mills that buys, and it was like I figured about 100. And so I'd like to talk the numbers with
okay.
staff if we could.
Well, and in particular, we'll have that, you know, information ready for the full committee. But the original bill was a full 15 cents additional, and then with the dash two amendments, then it.
But if you divide that up by units, you don't get the same number of
right.
units.
Okay.
So I'd just like to.
Do you have an answer? Okay. Yes, please come forward and say your name and explain the calculation. That's the advantage of doing it while you're here, so then we don't have to.
In the original bill,
ma'am.
Excuse
yes, ma'am.
Christy Obing, Director of Nutrition Services. In the original bill, we forgot it was a biennium budget.
Oh, okay.
That was worth the $11 million. It would have been 22 for the year for the biennium.
At 15 cents.
When we realized that was a steep hill,
right?
We dropped it to 7 for the biennium for 7 cents a meal for the biennium. That would be about $8.2 million, I believe. And what that is based on the child nutrition programs. Annual number of lunches, which is about 48 million, excuse me, thank you, Joyce, and 22 million breakfasts
served in the state of Oregon.
I didn't
for
do
you.
The breakfast.
Yes.
Okay.
I figured 1 meal a day.
Okay.
Does that include summer?
No, that does not include summer.
Okay. Very good question, thank Representative Wisnett.
And follow up?
Yes, please. So,
and my other question then, we're talking about the $175,000. Is that for one additional FTE at agriculture or FTE, or excuse me, ODE?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a lot of work for one person.
Well, there. Excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Linsnat. It's actually two positions, one in each bill. One position would be for the Oregon Department of Education Child Nutrition Program, and the other position would be for ODA. And you're right, it would be a lot of work. The other little point, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention, we did bring down the biennium budget by proposing to start the program in January 2008. That gives the State Department and ODA a little bit of breathing room to get the program up and running.
And Madam Chair?
Yes.
And I can't find it right now. I've read it before. One of the bills I thought said to do all the Oregon schools, you know, universities and things. We're not doing it strictly K-12.
K-8, correct.
Thank you.
Excuse me, K-12.
K-12.
Public schools.
Representative Wisnett, you're like a hawk. You're checking out the terrain.
I have that ways and means background.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Any other discussion? Representative Innes?
You know, I've had the great delight to have farmers that live in my district, East County, and so I've enjoyed the fruits and the vegetables and the freshly grown things and knowing they're locally grown. So I think I'm very enthusiastic about this program. I wish you well. I've never seen so much enthusiasm in a room about good stuff and healthy eats. So we'll see what happens as
That's right.
it proceeds through the process, and good luck to you. Excellent.
Try our squash and try our potatoes. Oh, my goodness.
With pictures of the farmers, the real farmers.
Okay, thank you. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative Dahlem?
Aye.
Representative
Minnis?
Aye.
Representative
Roland?
Aye.
Representative
Wisnett? Aye. With a unanimous support to go to the full committee, House Bill 3476 is adopted.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
I move the...
I have to open it up first.
That's right.
There's a work session now in for House Bill 3307.
Okay.
Representative Roblin.
I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3307.
Okay. There is a motion to move the dash ones to 3307. Any discussion or comment? Seeing no objections, dash ones are in. Representative Roblin.
Madam Chair, I move the House Bill 3307 to the Education Committee with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Roblin has made a motion to move House Bill 3307 to the full committee with the amendment. Any discussion, questions? Thank you. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative
Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Hammond?
Aye.
Representative Dahlem?
Aye.
Representative Minnis?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative
Wisner? Aye. House Bill 3307 is now moved to the full committee. I will open a hearing, a close House Bill 3307 hearing, and I'm going to do the work session on House Bill 3185.
I'm Chair.
Representative Roblin.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3185 to the Education Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Committee? You're working hard, and I'm hungry. any discussion? Thank you. With that, Andy, would you please call the roll?
Representative
Buckley. Aye.
Representative
Cannon.
Aye.
Representative
Zollman.
Aye. Representative Minnis. Aye. House Bill 3185 is passed, and I close that hearing. And committee? We had two other bills that we will be moving forward till Thursday. You did excellent work, and congratulations to all the proponents of the bills. Yay! This committee is now adjourned.